Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Barr on Stardish Radio.
Hi, this is Katie McLean, and I'm on Stardish Radio.
This is Jill Larson on Stardish Radio. Tune in and stay tuned. You never know who will drop by.
Hey, this is Sydney Penny, and you're listening to Stardish Radio. Stay tuned. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Stardish Radio. Today is December 29th, 2008. I hope everybody had a fabulous Christmas and Hanukkah and whatever else you guys celebrate. It's a fabulous thing to have you back, and we are going to start counting down 2008, excuse me, 2008 in soaps, and I am going to pull on a few guests right now. I have Brandon, who's right there. I see you now, Brandon. The switchboard seems to be working fine.
Hey, Joanne. I finally got through.
I see that. Now, hang on. Let me pull on my buddy, Michael Fairman, everybody.
Hey,
Michael.
How are you, Joanne?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
I'm good. I've been working my list for tonight, checking it twice over the holidays for Christmas.
Okay.
Getting ready to unload this list to all of you.
I'm serious. It's a difficult task, but someone has to do it.
I know. I'm happy to do it.
Okay, and we're happy that you decided to come back on with us. And I'll tell you, I had a little difficulty with it myself, and Brandon also.
Oh, I knew Brandon would have some things to share here.
Yes. It was much harder than I thought it was going to be, and I'm
not
quite
hard.
Done
it,
yet.
It is hard. It is hard, and I want to just tell everybody that the complete list, you know, what you hear tonight as far as my picks and reveals, the complete list will be on michaelfairmansoaps.com tomorrow night. So you can go back and, you know, everything that we've talked about, they can actually see the list and the images with them. So, you know, but I think what we really should, just in starting, really that, you know, this year was such a tumultuous year in soaps. And
yes, it was.
And as we all have experienced in our professional careers and watching the shows, and it's been really, really tough. And I had come back from New York the other week. I just gone to Guiding Light behind the scenes with the Guiding Light, and I was interviewing Ellen Wheeler, which is on the website. And it really was interesting because, you know, she's taken so much heat and flack and negative stuff from the production module and what she's done with Guiding Light. But really what she said, and what I think is really important for all of us who love the genre, is we've got to stop. I mean, we slam each other. This year, I really saw the industry implode on each other. It was so tough. I mean, it was just a really people just ragging on each other and imploding on each other, and there's so little left of all of us, you know? So mm-hmm. I'm hoping 2009, while we criticize and slam, you know, I hope we will remain a united front and try to keep daytime, you know, on the air and strong and through all the tough times we're going through.
Absolutely. And you know what, Michael, before you guys got on the air, I posed a question in the chat room because in the chat room they're saying that some of the boards, the message boards that people create for the actors are kind of dead and not a lot of chatter and stuff like that. And to me it seems like the fanfare is kind of dying off. You know, there's not much excitement. I don't know if the actors are too accessible or the spoilers are out there too much or everything has just become so predictable,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's not exciting to watch the shows anymore. I don't know what it is, but to me it feels like a bad energy right now.
Well, I feel I think there's energy coming from a lot of different sources. Number one, with the shows in general, the territorialism of ABC, CBS, you know, all of these things being very territorial. There's the soap press wanting to cover them, and as you know from doing your own show and I'm doing a website and other people, you know, we want to promote their material. We want to promote their stuff. And then at times there's this pushback, well, we're not going to do that. It seems like everybody should be in bed together here trying to, like, promote as much we can with the numbers dwindling and what's happening with the budget cuts and the state of soap operas and the economy and losing, you know, passions and almost, you know, rumors that AMC almost was going to be canceled and you know, the Days of Our Lives debacle. I mean, so much. And I just feel like, you know, I don't know if it's too much. I almost feel like we're not all united in doing it. And then the fans, you know, they seem to be really taking pot shots at a lot of stuff. And then I think the shows are imploding on each other. So,
right.
You know, it's just been really, really good.
I guess I'll have to hold that one for another show because I think we could go on for a long time
Absolutely.
About that one.
That's not what we're here about, but I just...
Yeah. We could definitely go on for a while about that one. Let me just say it before we go on. That's one of the reasons why I've been helping Bob Guinea promote Rock the Soap Cruise because, I mean, I've been a fessed up ABC freak for my whole life. I've never swayed. I've never watched another soap. But what I like about Rock the Soap Cruise that they're doing out in California is that they're using all of the networks. And it's going to bring all those fans from each network together in one place. And hopefully it'll let some ABC people see some NBC people and say, oh, wow, I want to check that out, or CBS. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing I like about Rock the Soap. Okay, enough about that one. So let's move on.
Well, are you going to go to Rock the Soap?
You know what? I actually am. I found that out today. I am going to
really?
Rock the Soap Cruise. Yes, I am. I got that news this afternoon, and yes, I will be going.
Well, there we go.
So exciting.
That's exciting for you.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
I've never been to California, and I've never been to Mexico, and I haven't been on a cruise in about 25 years, so it'll be cool.
So you're going to take Dramamine with you?
Well, I don't get seasick, so I'm not worried about that. I mean, I've been on boats before, but, you know, like my whole life, but... as far as a cruise, the last one that I went on to is, God, where the hell did we go? To the Bahamas, I think it was. And I was 17. It was like my graduation, my high school graduation present.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so this will be cool. And this is actually being given to me by my aunt for my 40th birthday, which is next year, but that's okay. That's okay. So that's the only reason.
Give us all the scoops of what went on in the boat.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm excited. Okay. So where do we want to start?
I think we should start with the comebacks of the year. What do you think?
Okay. That's fine with me. This category is best comeback. Michael, what is your take, friend?
Okay. So I'm going to tell you the best comeback. I think... And I just want to say, the best and worst are from December 27th, 2007 to December 27th, 2008. So everything they're up to last Friday was eligible in the best and worst. You know, some people
okay.
have different eligibility periods. So
right.
I think the best comeback, there were two, but I'm giving it to Debbie Morgan of All My Children because
mm-hmm.
I think she was phenomenal in most of the material she had this year. And really, really, really exceptional. And I also give honorable mention to Ariane Zucker at Days of Our Lives, who I think is the only one that's carried the weight of that show. And this year has been able to show Nicole in a whole new light with a lot more depth. So those are my picks, but I would say Debbie Morgan. However, my worst comeback, Darnell Williams of All My Children. I really, really look at him, and I don't know what happened. I feel like this isn't the same actor I saw years ago, or some of it, he's walking through it. I feel like sometimes him as in the police, you know, working in the police, it's tough for me to watch. And I also was really disappointed by Jeannie Francis's comeback as far as the material
mm-hmm.
and Andrea Evans' big disappointment there. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there was Andrea Evans coming back as Tina that could have done a lot. There was the whole issue of, you know, being in L.A., living in L.A., and, you know, filming in New York, if that was the reason. But it kind of just fizzled, and
right.
I was really disappointed with that. So I really think Debbie was great. Darnell was not working for me, and those
okay.
are my comebacks.
Okay. I completely agree with Debbie Morgan's comeback. She is definitely who I picked. Susan Haskell was another one that I picked. And as far as worst comeback for me was definitely Andrea Evans
mm-hmm.
because they just really did absolutely nothing with her. And
I just didn't see a purpose to her even coming back.
Well,
period.
I thought they were going to do some things with it, and then it just fizzled to nothing, and it was
right.
like, yeah.
By the end, it was like garbage, and it was
yep.
just really terrible. So,
yep.
Yeah, so those are mine. Brandon, what about you?
Well, my best was, I agree with Michael, Debbie, but I also put Darnell in there just because it was great seeing them back together on screen as their characters. And I agree with Michael somewhat about Darnell, but I think the problem there is the writing more than the performance.
Mm-hmm.
I think Darnell's the kind of actor who kind of needs to be stimulated by his material.
Yeah, and you
really
know,
hasn't.
I want to... Yeah, I mean, and that is partly true because he really, to me, honestly, and you know, I really love Darnell as a person. He just looks bored to me.
Right.
There. He looks bored.
If the words aren't coming out of his mouth, it's who killed Richie Novak. It's like he has nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it does. It does look like he's bored. And you know what? When I spoke to him at Super Soap, he actually said he was really pissed off at the storyline that he was given.
And I put him as Super Soap, and I couldn't get him to say much about any. I mean, he just seemed removed. I guess that's
yeah,
what I thought. You know.
Yeah, he said basically that he was very disappointed at what they gave him, and the whole you know second storyline with the 20-year-old kid, and he's like you know he said he fought them on it, but he lost the fight. So it was probably something that he did because he wasn't into it. He was mustering through it and, you know, tried to do the best at what he didn't like, you know.
Well, the story is ridiculous. I mean, it's let's call a spade a spade. It's absolutely ill-conceived from the very beginning. And you know, it's like I said, if you're not stimulated by the material, especially an actor of his caliber, then it's going to show on screen.
Well, the one thing that I really, really, really didn't like that everyone liked, you know, I could not understand for the life of me the train track thing, which I thought, oh, this was great, but why were they wearing these 1890s outfits? It was like I didn't understand the costuming. I just had some issues with it, but,
right.
you know, there we go.
Right.
Most underrated. I have the most underrated, my most underrated man and woman. And my most underrated man is Joshua Morrow on The Young and the Restless. I think he does a great job as Nick. I think he's been in heavy, heavy story through the entire year. And I think this guy is one of those guys that's always there, consistent, and he's always dealing with these heavy hitters on Y&R, these big, you know, Bergman and Braden and, you know, all these guys. But to me, he just really works for me. And I think he's subtle. And in the scenes with Amelia Hindley in her coma and with his mother and Eric Braden, I just thought he was really, really, really good. And my most underrated female, I'm giving it to Carolyn Hennessy of General Hospital because I think she's such a great actress. And I feel like I'd love her to get some heavy dramatic material and even them to utilize her more.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see the Christmas episode that I thought was really, really funny, but those are my most underrated.
Well, my most underrated is, right as of now, I chose Eileen Kristen because I think Eileen Kristen has a lot to offer, and I really think that they kind of play her as a doofus half the time.
Right.
And they, you know, after speaking to her on several occasions and hearing how, you know, they pitched this story to her about who's Rex's daddy, and it was supposed to be Mitch Lawrence, and it was supposed to be this, and then they kind of just dropped it off the face of the earth like it never happened, and then they bring it back up, and it's kind of like they keep teasing her with the carrot, you know, and it's like, okay, now you're on screen, but now you're off. Now you're on, but now you're off, and we don't even know if you're coming back on now. So to me, it was Eileen Kristen, and as far as an underrated male, I really wish my pick was Ron Hale, because I think Ron Hale is a great actor, and I really think it does him a disservice standing behind where Ruby stands.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's standing behind a counter serving Ruby's chili, and that's all he does. If he's not getting his ass kicked by one of Sonny's competitors, he's serving Ruby's chili.
And let me just say, and that's such a really good choice, and I'll tell you why. Does everyone remember, like, this was Roger Coleridge on Ryan's Hope? I mean,
exactly.
This guy has won multiple Emmy nominations. It's kind of like, And I really miss, why don't we have more Mike Sunny stuff anymore? He's only rolled out when there's a big Sunny problem for a second.
Exactly. And that's why I thought it was ironic that I picked the two of them, because they were fabulous on Ryan's Hope together.
Of course. Very good.
You know, they were the show. I mean, I watched an episode of Ryan's Hope the other day, and they're at the stage where Delia's pretending to be blind, and it's hysterical, and she's so great, and she's just, I don't know how to explain it. If anybody has SoapNet, you need to, you know, TiVo one of these episodes of Ryan's Hope and see what these actors are really capable of, because in today's world, they do not.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that was mine. What about you, Brandon?
Well, it seems kind of odd, but my pick for underrated actress is Kathy DePaiva on One Life to Live. And I know she's been nominated for an Emmy, and, you know, the show has revolved around her for much of her tenure, but I don't think she gets her due for being as good as she is. And she got some really killer material this year after she kicked Todd out. And, you know, the tender scenes with her daughter Star dealing with her pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And after the supposed stillborn birth of the baby, you know, just their scenes together were really tender and really beautifully played. And she's one of those actresses that is given to going over the top when the material isn't quite up to par, but when it is, she really can sell it, and I don't think she gets her due for that.
Okay.
I think she's just very consistent. You know, she's consistent, and, she's consistent. That's what I would say about her, you know, and there's times when I would love to see her get something more to do.
Right.
Really, something meaty to do. I mean, something,
because
you know,
it's always
that
the
she
same.
Can really...
The problem is it's always the same, because it's always Todd, the kids,
mm-hmm.
A man, we haven't seen her deal with. I think she had the brain tumor once, right? Didn't she have
the
brain tumor? Yeah, but even that didn't feel like, I didn't feel so emotionally invested for her. I think the problem with Blair sometimes is we just don't feel that emotional with her. But I don't think that's her fault. I don't think that's her fault. I think that's a writing issue.
Absolutely not. But you know, like I said, when she does get some material that is up to snuff, she can sell it as well as anybody on that show.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know what? Let me take a caller and see what they have to say about that choice. We got Tony. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Dylan. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Say hi to Brandon and Michael.
Hey, Brandon. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Tony.
So, Tony, the category is, who do you feel is most underrated in soap for 2008?
Okay, most underrated. I definitely agree with Michael's choice of Carolyn Hennessy at General Hospital.
Yeah.
Because, she's definitely, he plays this top lawyer to routine, and she had a real romance with Max and all that thing. So, but she also, she needs a heavy storyline, because she's been mainly, you know, Sonny's Laxey or like a little romance here with Max here and there. She definitely needs something hard, you know, so she could really,
yeah, I mean, I think she's got the potential, because, you know, there's something that happened. You know, why was she so upset about Sonny, you know, betraying Kate?
Right.
You know, she had there's some baggage with her that it would be great to explore it more, plus
nice
having
backstory.
Her comical side. You know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is the male pick, Tony?
The male pick. Wow, that's a real tough choice. I just don't know where I can take it.
You can come back and think about it. You don't have to answer right away.
I really didn't go about a male choice, but I really need a chance to think about that. But the female
choice,
I got right away.
All right, so hang back. Okay, Michael, what's next?
Let's do best single performance in a storyline or moment of the year male. So just to clarify with everybody, this is, if you're watching the show, it's that single episode that you thought the actor really was tremendous, you know, or a great moment. And I have some of my top choices, I'll tell you, and then I'll tell you who I've got. I thought Thorsten Kay was wonderful in Myrtle's Tribute, wonderful. I thought Jason Thompson was wonderful when the baby was born in the nursery on General Hospital. I even thought Steve Burton was good when he said goodbye to Michael. And I loved Nigel in 1968 and One Life to Live when he was dressed. Wasn't he Asa or, wait, he was Chuck or he came off is really funny. But my choice is Christian LeBlanc for It's a Wonderful Life, the episode that just aired on Friday. I thought it was brilliant, brilliant, superlative acting. And that was a standalone episode. And I don't know if many of you that are out there have saw it, but, you know, it was a takeoff on the movie with Jimmy Stewart. And it was what would his life be like if he wasn't born and what would happen to all the people that he loved. And it was just a beautiful piece of ensemble work, but driven by Christian. So he got in right under the end for me, and I'm going with that one. So I say Christian.
Okay. What about you, Brandon?
Oh, I have Eric Braeden in the immediate aftermath of Sabrina's death. Those episodes in the sudden impact.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought he was absolutely phenomenal with. You know, he Eric Braeden is always restrained, but he was incredibly restrained. He was just the coldness he showed to his family and to Nikki, and, you know, just kind of the range of emotions he went through in those two or three episodes were astonishing to me.
They were wonderful.
I have to say that I went with Bree Williamson and Forbes March in The Death of Forbes. Because I think Bree Williamson is really putting out a lot of great stuff right now. I hate the fact that it falls on the heels of the firing of Forbes March, but the death of Nash just brought out a whole bunch of stuff that I think is pretty fabulous. And I think Bree was amazing in that hospital room as he lay there dying. And what cinches it with Forbes for me was when she let him know that she was actually pregnant, and just the emotions on his face, and it made me cry like a tiny little baby, and to me that's who cinched it for me.
Interesting. I didn't have that, but, you know, I will tell you my single performance in a storyline or a moment of your female. I went with Erica Slezak of One Life to Live for the show where she was in the crypt in the mausoleum with Victor, telling him with the crowbar, having a just falling apart for what he has done to the family and to her, and then the subsequent scenes where she breaks down in front of Charlie and tells him that she was sexually abused by her father and she has multiple personalities. I thought it was just exquisite. And it shows you why she is the best of all, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I just, that stuck out in my mind as I sat here over, you know, knowing that we're going to do the show and I was going to announce this, and I kept coming back to that because it was really, really powerful to me. Did you guys like that?
I loved it. Brandon, I'm sure you did.
You know what? I actually kind of didn't. I thought it was a little over the top. It was a little hammy for me.
Really?
Oh, really?
It was. I don't know. She was wailing, and I love Erica Slezak, like, don't get me wrong, but I've seen her better.
I really liked it. I didn't feel it was untrue or over the top. I felt like she had been taken to such a level with how cruddy Todd is and Tina is, and, you know, what happened to Bree Williamson's character, and you know, I just thought it was just an outpouring, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
What did you think, Brandon? What's your single performance?
I have two, actually. The first one, and I'm not saying this just because I love her, but I think that Laura Wright on April 11th, when Carly found out that Sonny shielded Kate instead of Michael during the shooting, and she just tore into him in the hospital, I thought it was absolutely astonishing work. And I'm not saying that just because I love her. I absolutely believe that was the best I've ever seen her. You talk about somebody who's underrated. I think she is incredibly underrated. And if she doesn't get an Emmy nomination this year based on that her work in that storyline,
I think Brian Franz will make sure that Laura Wright is. I mean, this is his girl. I mean, she is so front and center in everything. You know,
fabulous. I mean, and I just thought her work during that episode particularly, but during that whole storyline in general, was just exquisite.
Mm-hmm.
And my other one was Susan Haskell when Marty was on the stand a couple weeks ago and Taya basically ripped her to shreds on the stand.
Well, that I've got more about that later, but yeah, I mean, that's without saying.
when Taya made Marty confess that it wasn't rape and that she wanted to make love to Todd.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, 15 years ago when that original storyline took place. It was it played into the history so magnificently, and I'd been waiting for that. I'd been waiting to see that Susan Haskell return since she came back in June. You know, she was kind of Pod Marty for a while, and now, in this episode, she was back, and she was fiery, and she was great.
Yeah, I have lots to say about Susan Haskell coming up throughout our...
Well,
our
in the chat room...
I thought it was phenomenal, so I'm saving Susan here, because I think she's done the best work.
Best work. In the chat room, we have some fans who thought that the scenes of Hope dying with Kristen and Brandon were worthy of their favorite moments. The birth scenes. What else is in here? Come on. Cole and Marty at the hospital. And also Cole at Marty's gravesite.
Well, I just want to say regarding Marty, because I have so many Marty moments to talk about later, but, you know, the one where she was in the hospital with Nora and she ended up on the floor, really good. I mean, all of that was spectacular.
Yeah.
And, you know, given their history together and the fact that it was the original people playing the roles again.
It was spectacular. You know, I loved Hillary, too. I mean, I loved it all. I loved it
right.
all. Right. I mean, I just, you know, I can't say enough.
Let me hear from another caller. Area code 562. What's your name? 562. What's your name?
Ryan.
Ryan.
Ryan with the B.
Hi, Brian. What was your pick for that category? Do you need us to repeat it?
Yes, please.
Best
single performance by an actor or actress in a storyline.
I think when Jean Cooper was picking up her lookalike Marge to drive her to rehab and was talking her through it and telling her everything was going to be okay right before they got in the car accident.
Well, that's good. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And what about
you? Have an actor?
For an actor, I think it would probably be, God, that's a good one. Let me think. The only thing that comes to mind is Eric Braeden in The Young and the Restless when he was in Mexico and he was on the beach with his wife Nikki, played by Melody Thomas Scott, and he told her that their relationship was like a poison and to get away from him, and it was just very emotional. And
well, it's really, really interesting you said that, Brian, because the next category was best performance by a duo in a storyline, and my second pick is Victor and Nikki in Mexico. Brian, do you remember the scene inside the bar where they had the fight, like he says, he's sick of her, and just, you know, they had this big Victor and Nikki fight.
Right.
He never wants to see her again, how disgusting, she makes him sick and ill, and she's crying hysterical. I mean, and I can't remember if that was before she was drunk or after, but I thought that was a really good scene.
I thought that was a good scene with him. For Melody, I thought, because Nikki's character is so pathetic when it comes to Victor,
right,
that there was no, you know, I couldn't say, okay, that was the best performance by an actress or a duo, because Nikki was so annoying to me at that point. I just wanted to slap her and say, he's treated you like shit for 30 years. Kick him to the curb.
Right. Exactly.
But that was a really powerful scene, and I think all in all, Young and Restless had a really, really good year. Now that the Wicked Witch of the West has cleaned out her disc.
Absolutely. He's talking about Lin-Marie Latham, everybody, which we'll get into. I totally agree with you there, Brian. I'm glad that she cleaned out her desk.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Brian, and I'll keep you on hold, okay?
Bye.
Okay. Next category, Michael.
I was just going to give my single performance by a duo in a storyline, and I'm giving it to Jean-Paul Lavoisier and Robert Woods for the first episode in the 1968 time travel when they were actually back in 68 And the comedic timing of these guys was so brilliant when they were in, you know, back at the ranch, and, you know, One Life to Live came up, and it's in 1968, and they were confused by who everybody was, and then looking at each other. I just think those two are great together. I love them together, and those scenes I thought were particularly noteworthy because they play so well off of each other as a duo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did.
Well, I chose Susan Haskell and Trevor St. John when John McBain crashed through the window and her going after Todd. I just thought that even though he didn't get to say much about nothing, his whole presence was just incredible, and she was just amazing. There's no, like, no other way.
There's nothing
to describe it.
Yeah, and there's nothing that indels in my mind, which will, I mean, as we go along here, you'll hear what I'm saying, but when she was holding the gun and that whole scene ensued, I had a knot in my stomach the entire time. You know, it was that good. It was that good. Because we waited for that to happen, you know.
For a long time. And I would have to even include Michael Easton in that because he was fabulous,
too. He was great.
Too.
He was fabulous in it. Fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Go ahead, Brandon.
And the way Trevor played Todd's utter devastation at the you know, the realization that his whole entire world was falling apart all over again for the umpteenth time was really marvelous.
Absolutely.
And I'm telling you, there is nobody that can pull this off other than – I don't believe someone can pull this off but Trevor. I mean, he really can pull all of these kind of emotions and make you care and hate this guy.
Right.
You know – he's just, it was amazing.
Yeah, so that was my pick. Brandon, did you have one?
Yeah, my best duo was all the way back to January to the climax of the diner standoff on One Life to Live. Both Kathy Breyer and Erica Slezak and Kathy Breyer and Chris Stack. They had some marvelous
scenes
really when they were both trying to talk Marcy into, you know, surrendering Tommy and, you know, turning herself in, and it was all going to be okay, and, you know, they were going to work together and work it out, and especially Breyer and Slezak together. Those scenes where Vicky needed a heart medication and you know, Kathy Breyer is such a marvel anyway, and you know, having a partner like Slezak to play off of those were phenomenal scenes.
That was phenomenal because that was another one where you were sitting there going, "Oh my God, what's going to happen?" And it was really gut wrenching. And when Emmy reels come out, you know, there you go. They should.
Absolutely. So, what's the next one?
Let's go to worst couple. Worst couple.
Mm.
I've got some. Here are the ones that are the runners up. Lucas and Chloe on Days. I can't even watch. I can't watch Lucas and Chloe. It's just hard to watch them kiss. Victor and Sabrina on Y&R, I'm throwing in there because, you know, they made this Sabrina-Victor thing. She just came on like 2 months ago, and all of a sudden this great love affair. And that was hard for me to make them like, oh, what a couple to root for, even though they had all these likes and interests and you could see why they could. But it was so thrown in all of a sudden. I'm not talking about the fallout with Sudden Impact, which I thought was great. I'm talking about them as a couple. Jared and Natalie on One Life to Live, guys, I'm sorry, it doesn't work for me. I don't like Natalie with Jared. I don't see it. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Paul and Meg on As the World Turns, horrendous for me. I can't watch them. But I'm going with Parker and Liberty on As the World Turns, the teenagers, because I think it's just, who wants to watch teenage sex storyline? And they're horrible. Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going with Parker and Liberty of As the World Turns as my worst couple.
Okay. Well, I think my worst couples are Sonny and Anyone, because right now I can't stand him with anybody. I can't even imagine him back being with Carly. I can't imagine him being back with Brenda or Lily or whoever. And, I don't even know if it was this year, but I really hated him with Emily. I can't even remember because that's just how.
That was this year, but that really, really
sucked.
I hate it.
Yeah. So okay, well, I'm just throwing that in for good measure. And as far as One Life to Live, You know what? I'm not a big fan of Jared and Natalie either, although they did just get engaged yesterday, I guess it was. See how long that'll last. Other than that, the only other one was Talia and Antonio, and I know that is definitely coming to an end because Antonio's leaving anyway. So, and then the other one was Christian and Sarah. That was just like, you know, he was dating a 12-year-old boy for a while, you know. It was just stupid. So I didn't like none of them.
Okay, Brandon.
Hello?
Yeah, you there?
Hello?
Brandon. He might be losing, he might be breaking up, but that's okay. We'll move on to the best. Who is the best?
Well, there is no competition here. Patrick and Robin, General Hospital, without question.
Mm-hmm.
I have never, between doing General Hospital Night Shift, all the storyline material they had this year, and culminating with the wedding and everything, I just can't think of a better. I mean, there was no competition. I have them and them. It's Patrick
right.
and
Robin. Yeah, I think Patrick and Robin are definitely a great couple. Although sometimes it's so great it gets sickening after a little bit, and you do have to kind of switch it a little bit. But I like them. It keeps the show interesting. Outside of the mob world.
Well, that's why I think they're the heart and soul of it. Everything else
right.
is mob, you know?
Right. I love the love between Zach and Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
Zach has never loved anybody in his life the way he loves her, and I think they have an incredible chemistry, the two of them together. And on General Hospital, I really don't have a favorite couple at all. I mean, I don't. I are there any couples left on General Hospital? I don't even know. I don't
no.
even remember.
I mean, I hear you. I hear you. That's why. I
there's
mean, when
some
I
hookups.
Look, I mean,
we can
best
do
hookup.
A favorite
hookup,
but you know,
yeah,
we could do a hookup, but there's no couples left on
right.
General Hospital, you know, and so I'm done with that. Brandon, you're back. What was your pick?
My pick for best or worst.
Best couple.
I picked Jax and Carly on General Hospital. I know that they've spent kind of a good portion of the year broken up, but, you know, I hated them at first, but they grew into their chemistry, and I think Laura and Ningo have an amazing chemistry, and it looks like they're kind of coming back together, and I just think it works.
Yeah, and who's
your
worst?
It's kind of gotten better in the past couple of weeks with the whole journal thing and her prosecuting him, but this whole Adam and Heather thing on Young and the Restless has been ridiculous.
Oh, well, let's go to Adam, because one of the category that I have is character that we originally liked in 2008 and then hated them in the end. I have Adam Wilson, because when Chris Engen first came on the show, I was like, wow, I really like this. This is really good. And then by now, I could care less about his character or him. I've done a 360 because I feel like he's played the same thing. The character's become boring and predictable, and I only see demise. I mean, I think he's going to get chipped off here soon anyways. I just don't see it. So
it was one of those things where he came on during the strike, and the original storyline originally intended it was pretty good.
Was
and
really
then,
good, and then that took a left turn.
You could tell the new team came in. They didn't know what to do with it, where to go with it, and so they kind of wrote him into a corner.
Right,
and
so I think that's on its way out.
It was no fault of the actor. It was just the character.
Right, so I have Adam Wilson as the character that I originally liked and hated in the end of the year. And Joanne?
Say the thing again, Michael. I'm sorry. Everybody broke up on me.
A character that we originally liked in 2008, and then by the end of the year you ended up hating them.
Oh, God. Who is it? I had such a hard time with this question. I'm going to pass on this one for right now because I honestly can't think of somebody yet. Yeah, just move on because I honestly can't think of someone right now. I sat there and I tried to pick and I really couldn't.
I'm at a standstill at that one. It's still blank.
Well, the character that I originally hated in 2008 and then ended up liking was when Connie Falconeri from Bensonhurst first came on as Kate Howard, I really didn't like the character. And by the end, I really liked the character, and I'm like, where is she? Where is this character? Where did she go?
Yeah, you know what? I have to say that also. You know what? That's a good one. That's somebody that I would be toying around with because I really liked Kate Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just – I'm thinking about them that whole little thing there today. I love Lisa LoCicero. I think she's a great addition, and I would love to see the roles reversed. I think Lisa LoCicero would make a better mob chick than Connie Falconeri. I don't know. That's off topic. Move on to another category because I'm just going to ramble.
I'm going to go to a worst storyline of the year.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to tell yours, Brandon, first, or do you want me to?
We kind of touched on mine a while ago, and it's Jesse's Secret Life on All My Children. I don't buy the fact that after Jesse was supposedly killed 20 years ago, he immediately fell into a relationship with another woman and has a 19-year-old daughter now. And, you know, I didn't buy a second of it, and you can tell that Darnell doesn't either. So
yeah,
there you go.
I didn't like it either.
Far and away.
Yeah. I have a list here to give you. I'm going to tell you the ones that I thought were the worst. The top worst storyline for me was a G-Man Kim murder on Young and the Restless. That was just the most ridiculous murder of a character that nobody really cared of that went on forever. I think during the writer's strike, when nobody really had a foothold of what it was, and then we had Jess Walton pining over the way this man that she married, who she was married to for 2 seconds, who she was just devastated over forever. And then I had the Mendora storyline in One Life to Live, which I thought was god-awful. I thought that really was weak and played really bad. I also honorable mention for worst storylines. I thought Michael being put in a permanent coma, I just didn't like the fact that they did that to a child. I know it was to further story, but I had an aversion to what that was and the violence it said about that. River and the ashram on Young and the Restless, bringing in Michael Baldwin's father and that whole ashram story, that's tanked. The text message killer on General Hospital I thought was not good.
Mm-hmm.
Allison Perkins' secret, remember that during the writer's strike?
Yes.
Tell Jessica that something happened, and that word that went out the door. What was that? I also really could not stand Robin's video blogging during her pregnancy. I thought that was really lame. Lizzie's kidnapping on Guiding Light. Because of the new production module, when they are out in PPAC, they basically look like they threw her in this well. It looked like she was in the middle of a road, and they stuck her in a hole. And she had, you know, a blindfold on. It just played really bad. And the one that really thought was offensive was Noah marrying Amira, the Iraqi girl, to keep her in the country on As the World Turns, which broke up the Luke and Noah gay romance, only to have the storyline tank. They ended up having writing her out anyways. So there were some real stinkers this year, guys, real bad ones.
Yeah, there was. I'll have to start with the Mendora storyline because that was – really insanely retarded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like absolutely such a waste of money and airtime for that one. I'm going to say the Michael Corinthos shooting. I think that was really ridiculous.
Yep.
I think that, you know, the way that they shot it, and it was so evident that the bullet ricocheted, and anybody and their mother that watches the show saw how it ricocheted, and as many times as it was said the bullet ricocheted, Sonny really didn't go to protect Kate before he protected Michael. Michael was nowhere near him, so it just made absolutely no sense to me at all. It was like they used it when they felt like it, and they took it out when they felt like it. It was completely inconsistent. I didn't like it at all, and I still think the ramifications of it are just so dumb.
How do you really feel?
Okay, you know, hey, this is the one night that I get to
freaking...
Yep, right. Go
off,
ahead.
So I'm going off, okay? I'm usually pretty reserved about my opinions, but that one, can't stand it. I think Dylan Cash is a good... I don't know if I want to say that or not. Let's just say I'm glad they're recasting him. We'll put it that way when the time comes. I'll leave it at that. And not hurt anybody's feelings. He is a little kid, so I got to watch it. Oh, gosh. Let's see. What the hell else? On All My Children, Ryan's amnesia.
Oh.
Bobby Wine was just the stupidest
thing. I had that in a whole special category.
That is just the stupidest storyline. I mean, Cameron Matheson even agreed how stupid that storyline was. Yes, I was very upset over the whole Allison Perkins storyline, that they just dropped the ball on that one. What else there was on General Hospital? I really can't stand. I mean, and the storyline's been going on forever. It's not even just in this year. The entire liaison storyline between Jason and Elizabeth, because it's like, oh, I want to be with you. Oh, you can't be with me. I'm too dangerous. Oh, but I don't care. I'm going to stand here and listen to you threaten mobsters. Oh, no, now I have to kill this guy. Do you see? Oh, come on already. Give the girl a man. Move on. Shoot him. Do something. I'm so over the mob storyline in general on General Hospital. So I guess it's the whole show.
Well, it was worst storyline, not worst show.
Okay. Well, I guess that is the storyline, the mob storyline. Then I'll narrow it down to the Russian mob storyline and say how stupid that one is. Okay. We'll narrow it down to that one until we get to the big one. Let me see. I got a caller here. Let's see what they have to say about it. Where'd you go? Oh, it's Georgette. Georgette, what's your pick on worst storyline?
I don't have anything to say because I don't even watch anymore. They're all really bad.
I'm hanging up on you. I'm hanging up on you so we can get an opinion.
Bye. I'm listening.
All right. I gotcha. Don't watch.
Okay.
Anthony.
Hello.
Hi, Anthony. This is Anthony from Hawaii. Anthony, what is your pick on the worst storyline this year in soaps?
I agree with All My Children.
The Ryan storyline?
Yes.
It's pretty bad. It was bad.
Okay,
I mean,
what
did
you think the best was?
Best one.
Anthony, what was the best storyline? Hello? I know who
I agree with G.H.
Oh, okay. All right, so we got a GH and an AMC one. Okay. Hang on, Anthony. All right, go ahead. What's the next category, Michael?
Well, now we need to do best storyline, the best storyline.
Oh, okay.
And this was tough. I struggled with this year. I think here were some of the honorable mentions. I thought, you know, on General Hospital Night Shift, I thought the colon cancer storyline, because Tristan Rogers made it work so well, was really good. Bold and the Beautiful actually did a shocker with the Storm suicide and the Katie heart transplant, because you kind of didn't see that coming out of anywhere. I loved Wacko Annie on All My Children because Melissa Clark Egan made that so good because of her. Otherwise, that would have just fallen apart even further than it could have. And then we come down to the two, which is Todd Marty. It was so controversial, and everyone was so taken aback by it, because where was Ron Carlovati going to go with this and what was going to happen? So on the fact of that, it's right there at the top because it was so controversial, but I think Sudden Impact on Young and the Restless was something that propelled so much story from that accident with David Chow and Sabrina, that it started this whole ball rolling that they desperately needed at that time on that show, because the show was horrible. And Sudden Impact came in and just flipped it on its ear. So I'm saying Sudden Impact and Todd Marty.
Okay.
But
what about you, Brandon?
I absolutely agree with Todd Marty. It's one of those things that got people talking. It's one of those storylines like Bill Bell used to write. It was deliberately paced,
yep.
And it was completely suspenseful. and you had no idea where it was going, even though you had this kind of nervous knot in the pit of your stomach over where it was going.
I constantly had that through the entire thing. I was,
and it built to a an absolutely gorgeous, glorious crescendo in November with with all the storylines kind of crashing together into one big story. I just thought it was absolutely dynamite.
Okay.
I think Bill Bell is up in heaven just smiling down on it. I really do.
Okay, let me see this caller. Hang on 1 second. Gigi, what did you think that it was? The best storyline.
Hello?
Best storyline, Gigi.
Why are you calling me that? That's weird. Best storyline, Nash's death.
Really?
Yes, well, I think it was written really well, and it showed like backstory and everything. But I'm just biased because I love Forbes March, but I think they wrote I think they wrote the death really well, and I think the funeral and everything, they really, I think they really showed what she was grieving and all that. So I think they did really well with the whole Jessica thing, and of course Bree Williamson did amazing. So I think that was, even though it was like really sad and depressing and stuff, I think they did really well with the storyline.
Okay.
As for everything else, I really don't watch. Like General Hospital,
okay,
I agree.
I'm hanging up on
sick
you.
Sick of the mob. Sick of the mob.
Okay. Let me get in here. Hang on. Don't go nowhere.
Okay.
My favorite storyline, I have to say, is Star's pregnancy. I think that Kristen Alderson really did some amazing work this year for a young girl. It's not far-fetched these days to have a 16-year-old girl have a baby, but to actually have to go through it and, you know, play opposite someone who's a few years older than you, you know, that is an adult. And I just think she put out some absolute beautiful work, and I think that the relationship between Star and Blair bloomed because it was always about Todd and Star. Now it's kind of, I need my mom, you know, and I kind of saw that side of it, you know, instead of the little girl protecting her dad, it was more now I need my mommy kind of thing. And I think they did a fabulous job with it. I think it was done properly as far as the social issues. This falls into my social pick also. I just think it was an amazing storyline, and it led into some other good stuff. You know, it didn't just stop there. It's not over yet. You know what I mean? So her pregnancy unleashed a few things for Bree Williamson to follow up with, Kathy Breyer. So this is like going to tie a lot of people in together, which I like.
Very good.
So that's mine. Okay, so what's next?
I think since we're talking about writing, we should do the best and worst written soap of the year. And the worst written soap that I'm giving this year goes to Days of Our Lives, because I have to say the writing was so inconsistent. There was so much going on behind the scenes. People were shuffled. Things happened. None of it made sense. I thought it was I cannot watch one episode, nor am I invested in any of the stories. And so I have Days as the worst soap, written soap. And do you want to say what your worst is?
Mine is General Hospital, without a doubt. I just think that General Hospital has gotten way too involved into some messiness with the mob. It's not even like good mob stuff anymore, you know. I mean, back in the day, it used to be, you know, nail-biting, cliffhanger-ish, where you didn't know who was really in the mob. But now it's kind of like everybody's got an ID card saying, I am in the mob. It's like you might as well have those hello stickers on your shirt that you go when you go to a convention. Hello, I'm Jason Morgan, and I'm a hitman. I mean, everybody knows it. You know, there's no the mob, the premise of the mob is supposed to be secretive. I mean, you know, Vito Corleone owned an olive oil company. You know, he didn't just come out and say, hey, I'm Vito Corleone, I'm going to shoot you.
Well, the joke is the mobsters walk around Port Charles and everyone knows they're the mobsters, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Like, oh, it doesn't happen.
It doesn't. It's not realistic. I mean, you know what? It wasn't realistic when Port Charles was with the vampires, but that was far-fetched, and we knew that. It was kind of like a Twilight, or like a True Blood. Mob activity is a real thing, and in real worlds, this would never happen. So it just makes me nauseous to the fact that they're trying to put it off at, you know, if you want to be a mob show, change the name. You know, I mean, that's okay. You can change the name to the show and make it a mob show, but it's General Hospital. And unless these mob people are killing people and sending them to General Hospital, it's not even connecting. You know, unless, you know, Jason is in the hospital with Spinelli because he shot himself in the foot. You know, that's the only time General Hospital is connected. And that's another reason why I like Patrick and Robin, because they kind of keep the focus in the hospital.
Correct.
You know, it's where they met, and that's like the only piece of the hospital left. All the rest of it is gone. All the doctors are gone. You know, there's only like 3 doctors on staff, 4 doctors, you know, because they never show Lainey, who's a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and sure knows everybody in General Hospital needs a freaking psychiatrist. Where is she? She could be making a lot of money right now. You know? And the only time they ever show Minai Noji is when somebody's having a baby. And, you know.
Or she's having sex with somebody on the
Exactly, episode. Exactly. So I'm just really over GH right now. It's kind of hard to watch. I kind of skim through it, you know, and if I miss 2 weeks, it's not a big deal to me anymore. You know, I can just read a spoiler and know what I'm missing and be like, okay, because there's nothing pulling me in. And now that they're putting Jason and Sam back together and Lucky and Elizabeth, it's like, come on already. Bring on some new meat, man. I'm sick and tired of seeing the same people go at it. So I'm just so mine is GH. Brandon, what's yours?
My worst is Guiding Light. I think that the way they wrote off Ricky Paul Golden and Beth Edwards was ludicrous. I think that they have completely devalued and debased all of their characters to the point that outside of Reva and Alexandra, you turn on that show and you don't know what anybody wants. You don't know.
The problem
it's kind of all over the place. It's still got one of the most marvelous casts in the business, but the characters have been moved around and jerked around, and things have been switched midstream, and it's just there have been so many things thrown at all the characters that they've just been completely devalued to me, I think it's a big mess over there.
Yeah, it is a big mess. I mean, I just had lunch with Jill Lurie-Hurst, the co-head writer. You know, they've got that whole co-head writing teams, which makes it really, really odd, but she still don't quite understand the methodology behind it. But those, and even talking to Kim Zimmer last month, was basically that they, you know, there's these stories don't have a beginning, middle, and end. They get dropped. She was upset because the stories just get dropped. They're not consistent with the writing. You know, nothing, you know, things weren't working. And I know that they're trying to, with the return of Philip, trying to do a big major umbrella story and bringing Edmund back. But last year was really tough because the year before that, I watched all the Emmy reels from the actors, and the writing was really good for these great actors because they have some of the best, you're right, Brandon, they have some of the best actors on soaps in there. It just, the material was bad this year.
Listen, any cast with Kim Zimmer and Gina Tognoni and Robert Newman and Marja Duse is going to be fabulous.
Yeah, and I wanted to tell everyone that I have an exclusive with Gina Tognoni, which will be up on the website tomorrow. Gina and I talked last week right before New Year's with her and Shane, what's going on with Dinah, and she's getting married in real life this coming May, so we talk about her real-life wedding. So One Life to Live fans who love her is Kelly, and Guiding Light fans who love her should read the interview. But that'll be up on the site probably tomorrow night. So really look forward to that. And also you can hear in her own words what she had to say about what's going on with Guiding Light, the state of the soaps, and all of that good stuff. So it is Gina. You know, and Kim Zimmer you can hear on the website right now too, the interview I did with her the other week. It's really interesting to hear because it's Gina and Kim, right? Like the best, some of the best two actresses ever. And they just really tell it like it is. What they really think. Switching to the best written soap of the year, it's got to be One Life to Live, guys.
I agree.
Hands down. And I will tell you, Ron Carlovati, such a brilliant job. First of all, you saw how misguided the show was with Gary Tomlin and what was going on with the writer's strike and these storylines that were just like really what made just went nowhere. And it really lost its ground from what it was the year before. And then what I thought was brilliant this year was how he – you notice when the show titles come up, every episode has a clever title now. Every episode has a title screen. Yeah. We didn't have that before. And then just the intersecting of these storylines. I loved the 40th anniversary storyline. I loved part of the time travel storyline. I loved November Sweeps with the, how those all came together, as Brandon said earlier in the evening, with the baby
sweeps. It was one of the best November sweeps that I can remember.
It was one of the best November sweeps. And just David Vickers, David Vickers the dog, all these little funny things that happened. Just you have to look at it as a whole of what this guy has done on the soap. And hands down, you can put that material up against anything. And it's that good. And my honorable mentions were Y&R in recent months with the new writing team there. And I think GH Night Shift with Sri Rao had some really nice moments for a show that I couldn't watch the year before. But yeah, there is no competition here. It's Ron Carlovati's year.
I agree. I think we all agree on that one.
Well, we finally agree.
We all agree on one of them. All right.
It was bound to happen sometime.
Yeah, right.
It did. Okay, so what's next?
Let's do best recast. And I had The Men was really tough for me because there's three really good ones. We had Billy Miller as Billy on Y&R. We have Eric Martsoff as Brady on Days. But I'm going with Jeff Branson as Shane on Guiding Light. I really think he's terrific in this role. And I did not like him as Jonathan and All My Children. And I did not like what they did to him on that show.
Right.
So I was all set to say Billy Miller until I saw Jeff in the last several weeks, and I think he's come on there like – I mean, he really stands out on that show to me. So I'm going with Jeff Branson as the best recast.
I'm going with Chris Stack.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think Chris – I mean, I love Nathaniel Morrison, you know, but I liked him as Al, not as Michael.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think Chris Stack is a better Michael. I think he plays better opposite Michael Easton and better opposite
and
Kathy Breyer.
He's better off of Kathy Breyer, and you know why? Because he has a humanity to him that Nathaniel Morrison doesn't.
A lot of anger.
Yeah, well, that's Nathaniel. And Chris, you see the poignancy of his relationship with Marcy.
Right. I agree. A lot of people in the chat room are agreeing with that one, too. What about you, Brandon?
Believe it or not, I agree with both of you. Mine is a tie between Chris Stack and Jeff Branson. I think Chris Stack stepped into an impossible situation and, you know, made lemonade out of lemons.
And you know what else?
And
also with Chris Stack, I think we all, like, I remember talking to a lot of people, my constituents, and going, oh, what is this guy? Oh, he can't act out. And you watched it evolve, right? Like, he's one of those people, like, he came on, you're like, all right, oh, God. And he ended up winning us over. And how great is that he won us over? And that's a testament to a really good actor, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was one of those high-stakes storylines. I mean, you wouldn't wish it on anybody stepping into a storyline like that at that
And not with those actors. And not with those actors they have to play against either.
Right.
And as I said before, those scenes in the diner with him and Kathy Breyer when he was begging her to you know, surrender and let him help her were just phenomenal. They were phenomenal together.
Right.
And
Let me see what Tony thinks about that one. Tony, what do you think about that category?
I think that's a very good choice with Chris Stack and with Jeff Branson coming over playing Shane on Guiding Light. Because, you know, Shane is supposed to be off like up in the war, and he came back from Iraq being injured and all this thing, and he came in and just being someone who is didn't want to be there, like he didn't want to be there, someone. And Jeff, they did a great job bringing Jeff aboard. And since he's been on there, he's been short of spectacular on that show. And Chris Stack, and now you mentioned about Chris Stack over on One Night Live playing the role of Michael B. Bain, coming in for Nathaniel Marston after Nathaniel had his problems with the law, or supposed problems with the law, and being thrown into a major storyline just as fast with Kathy Breyer. I mean, it was phenomenal. He did a phenomenal job. He's still doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I agree. Michael, I would like to do over-the-top acting awards.
Okay. You don't want to do worst recast?
I want to do over-the-top first.
All right. Do you want to go first?
My over-the-top acting award goes to Cameron Matheson. That's who mine goes to. I mean, I can't even, I don't even know of a female that I could give it to. I honestly thought about it, and I really don't think right now I could give it to a female, but I think Cameron takes it hands down.
So you're saying, but let's, how are you defining over the top?
I'm defining him as he acts over the top. When he's given a scene, it to me, he takes it to a level it doesn't need to be at. Like,
right.
For instance, I watched an episode today, and the doctor says, Annie can't see you because of whatever. And he's like, you mean to tell me that you said she would get help here? And I'm like, wow, did he have to really lose all his breath to say that? That's what I'm saying.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I know I can't act like Cameron Matheson.
You.
I'm out of breath just by doing that. And I only got one lung and a half, you know, and that killed
right.
me. So I can't imagine how he does
right.
that all freaking day long. It's like it just comes out. It's too much. It's like we know what you're saying, man. You know, just take it back a little bit. Keep some of your air. We don't need it. Yes, when she took the pills, Linda's reminding me. Yes, when she took the pills. You said she's supposed to be safe. Okay, so that's my pick.
Okay.
Go ahead,
you want me to go?
Yeah.
All right.
You go.
I've got two. I have to tell you guys, Bree Williamson, sorry. I'm sorry. The test, some of it is just too over the top. The crying, the over the top as Jessica, as Tess. Sometimes I feel she overacts the material. I like Bess the best because she's so contained and she's not histrionic. And I feel sometimes that with the other characters, she's over the top. My other is Judith Chapman on The Young and the Restless as Gloria.
Yes.
I mean, this is over the top acting 101. And I love Judith to death as a person.
Me too.
But
you know, a little of her goes a long way.
It's like Judith. Okay, stop bugging your eyes out. We know, you know, it's just bring it back. Because even on the episode that I was talking to you guys about the other day, the What's a Wonderful Life, and she played a trodden down version of Gloria. She had no money. She was a maid sweeping, you know, scrubbing the floors. Even then I thought she was good, but still she was a bit over the top. So I give it to Bree and Judith. There you go.
Okay. What about you, Brandon?
I totally agree with Judith, and I like you, Michael, I adore her, but a little of her goes an awful long way.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst over-the-top acting I saw all year long on soaps was Tom Christopher's Return on One Life to Live. He was totally out of control from start to finish.
Oh, my God, I forgot about him. That's good.
He was totally out of control.
He
was from start
out
to finish,
of control.
And it was unwatchable. It was horrible.
Unwatchable. Yeah, and he always sweats above his lip, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. Let's see what this caller thinks. Area code 319, who do you think is the most over-the-top actor?
I would have to say Lisa LoCicero. I thought she came on pretty over-the-top, especially at the wedding after Kate got shot. She was kind of scary.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I thought so.
Good one. What's your name?
Sarah.
Well, Sarah, I really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. That was cool. That's a good one. Lisa LoCicero, I guess. You know,
I loved the scene with Lisa LoCicero and Megan right before she was going to go out and get shot in her wedding dress.
Before she went out and got shot,
Before she went out was brilliant. It was a great scene. I thought they both were really good in it.
Yeah.
And
okay. What was the next one you wanted to do, Michael?
Oh, I was going to do worst recast.
Okay.
I'm going with Brianna Moncrief as Colby and All My Children, and the reason is the other Colby was so awful, too, that this was doubly dreadful for me. It was like he brought one Colby who was really bad, and now we have this. And I was really looking forward to, like, a better Colby, but this doesn't make it for me, so I've got Brianna Moncrief. Sorry. Brianna.
No, you want to know something? I have two. One of them was Brianne Moncrief. I agree. And she's in another category too somewhere. But my other one was Amanda Baker as Babe.
Yeah. Well, I felt bad for Amanda Baker because, like, how do you top Alexa Havens or even sip into that?
You can't. You really can't.
They should have killed Babe off way before this tornado.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, they should have done it back then.
That was something, you guys, like we talked about Chris Stack. I mean, this is a situation where she couldn't win even if she was really good.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know what, Amber Childers, I actually did start to like her. And when I saw the comparison between the two girls, okay, I'm not going to get ridiculous, but when I saw that between the two of them, Amber definitely played as a Chandler. She was a little bitch in heat, and she was just didn't care. She was definitely a child of Liza and Adam. This girl here, I don't know, she's a milkman's kid. She has nothing to do with the Chandlers. She's nothing, you know. Yeah, she's a milkman's kid. She's from the sperm donor or whatever. She's not a Chandler or a Colby. She just is there, and she's got no purpose as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
So, Brandon, what's yours?
Well, Brianne was my honorable mention, believe it or not, but I thought the worst recast of the year was Noelle Beck as Lily on As the World Turns.
Mm.
I thought that...
You
want to talk about a no-win situation. I mean, that it's a no-win situation, but they did her no favors by, you know, throwing her with Mike, not playing her with Holden, not playing her, just kind of islanding her on the show, you know, isolating her from all her family and all her friends, and it.
And she was a slutty, and she was a slutty Lily at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's no fault of Noelle. She's a fine actress, but she's not Lily, and it's not working.
Well, I'd like to just piggyback on that, if you wouldn't mind, guys, by saying that my award for the worst decision made by an executive producer of the soap is Chris Gautman letting Martha Byrne walk out and not doing everything in his power to woo her back and putting out that breakdown service saying they were recasting the role of Lily. I mean, to me, the walkout of Martha Byrne started this whole Martha Byrne situation started the whole domino effect of this year. I mean, that really was the beginning of the shockers that were coming. And, you know, I feel bad for Noelle Beck. I know some As the World Turns fans I've recently spoke to are liking her better, Noelle, but Martha Byrne is the Earth Mother of that show, and she's been the center of that show for 20-some years. So that, to me, was the worst decision made by an executive producer of the soap.
Well, can I just touch here and pick up some chat from the chat room? Everybody in the chat room, well, not everybody, but a lot of people are saying that they think Rebecca Buttig was a horrible recast. But I don't know if you can be a recast when you created the character.
Well, that's returning.
that's returning.
Yeah, and I'd like to say to them, you know, if you, you know, the thing is, I agree. Sabine Singh, by the end of her run, was really kicking butt as Greenlee. And it really bothered me that publicity campaign came up with the real Greenlee's back.
Right. But what I want everybody to remember and realize is that it was a terrible campaign. It had absolutely nothing to do with Rebecca Buttig. Rebecca Buttig didn't write the campaign. She doesn't get paid to do the advertising. And you guys got to stop hating on the actress for what the network does.
Yeah, and let me just say something to you about that for them. Because I do on-air promos, and I have done them for ABC and CBS, and I've cut and written, you know, we are, you know, just so you understand, the presidents and the marketing people, they decide what storylines they want to promote and how they want to produce their stories. The actors have no say in this whatsoever. You cannot hate any of these people for anything to be promoting the show. They don't even know what they're going to do. You know, they know what their ABC storyline is going to be and what Brian Franz or whoever is in charge, you know, Barbara Bloom, they want to promote that week. And so these things are campaigns that they think are wooing back fans, how they think the fans will respond.
Right.
You know,
let's just touch on that, because I don't like when people hate on the actors for things like that, because it's just not fair, you know. They don't ask to be put in those positions. Nobody wants to be in a position where you're hated. You know what I mean? So whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, okay. So move on to the next category.
So that was, do you have a worst decision made by an executive producer of a soap? Anybody?
Me, I think the there's a few of them.
And I had the Ricky, by the way, just if I'm going to interrupt. I just want to finish. I also had P&G letting Ricky, Paul, and Beth go to ABC.
Right.
And whole, you know, that whole issue. So mine was Martha Byrne and then Ricky and Beth. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
I have Stuart Damon being let go. I have Forbes March being let go. Because I think that was just ridiculous. I mean, they created him, and they didn't. If the writers didn't want to write for Forbes, they could have wrote him off. They didn't have to kill the character. I think it was a horrible decision to have Michael Corinto shot.
Joanne, may I interject about the Forbes March thing for a second? I think that the point there was, you know, obviously Bree Williamson of the two is the bigger, the person they're pushing more. And
right.
Obviously, the decision was she was going to sign her contract. She probably wanted more story. You know, they needed to open up the story for her because otherwise she was stuck in that relationship. And again, they couldn't figure out a way to make it interesting, apparently. So,
right.
You know what I'm saying? I think it was a bigger picture with that.
Yeah, but I still think they could have pushed Forbes off to California where he came from. You know, I don't think they really needed to kill him.
She wouldn't have turned the story. You know what I mean? They had to kill him that way to have her freak out.
I don't know.
And they got a lot of story out of it. So
They got a story out of it.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, okay, I said Stuart Damon. The Michael Corinto shooting, I think, was terrible.
So you're saying Jill Fehrenfeld made a bad decision, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Good.
I think it was a terrible thing for them it's one thing to have all the violence on the show, but to let it escalate and have a kid actually shot and killed in the head, I think was pretty crass. I think there was other ways that they could have done it. I mean, I'm not a writer, but that's just my opinion as a watcher, you know, and I still think everything that they're doing after it is so stupid. You know, I thought the whole purpose of Michael getting shot was going to be to show that there were consequences to the actions of what's going on. And all it did was lead to more violence and more shootings and more babies getting kidnapped and this one. And you know what I mean? Like, it didn't solve anything. All you did was get rid of Dylan Cash. There's like no end to the story.
Yeah.
Because as long as they keep killing and shooting people, what's the purpose of shooting Michael?
It would have been a terrific decision if it had turned the show on its head and created a kind of a new paradigm for the show, but it really didn't. It just kind of deepened.
No.
What they should have done was
when Michael first got caught with a gun, they should have made Michael go to the police. They should have turned his little ass in and shown the consequences from that end, being like, you know what? Okay, your father's a big bad mob boss, but this is what really happens to kids who play with guns.
Well, I think
all it showed was, you know, nothing.
Well, the problem is, you know, I sat down with Megan Ward in an interview that's on my website. You know, we talked about this. She's a mother of a son who looks just like Dylan Cash.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
she was greatly offended. I mean, I don't
mm-hmm.
think any. You have to remember your main audience is a female demographic. A lot of them are mothers. Do they really
right.
want to see their young son shot in the head?
Exactly.
That was my problem with it. I understand it opening up the story, but you know, here's the issue. You know, they're going to age the character at some point, or bring him back, or who knows? You know,
mm-hmm.
I think it was unnecessary. I really do. I think they could have done. I don't think it was that. And I didn't feel my heart was falling out, other than, as you said, Brandon, earlier about Laura Wright's stunning performance, I wasn't – some of those scenes just didn't, like, break me up in pieces. I didn't have that emotional impact for me that I should have had because I was pissed that they shot a boy in the head.
Right. Yeah, it just like they're commenting in the chat room. Bob Guza said Michael getting shot was a consequence of Michael shooting Kate. That's not a consequence. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, let's kill the kid because he shot Kate. They should have done what a real life thing would have done, and threw little Tail in jail. Excuse me. But anyhow, so those are my picks. Brandon, did you get yours off?
Yeah, I agree with Michael about Chris Gowton letting Martha Byrne walk out the door on the heels of the way, the horrendous way that he botched Scott Bryce's ex. Those two coupled together were by far the most head-scratching decisions made by anybody in soaps in 2008.
And I'll
It sucked the air right out of that show. Those two leaving.
Horrible. It was devastating for it. The best decisions made by an executive producer was soap. Well, my number one is Frank Valentini realizing Christina Chambers just can't work as Marty, and getting Susan Haskell back to her rightful place under any circumstances was number one, because I have been the biggest Susan Haskell fan and love her acting for many years, and I've missed her very much in this role. And I remember I was there the night she won the Emmy, and she's one of the most phenomenal actresses that I've ever seen on a daytime screen. And when I saw Christina Chambers, I was like, what is this? And I'm so glad that he wised up and realized it wasn't working. My second one is Ken Corday getting rid of Frank Parker's Pop Brady. Because I could not – this guy, I think Frank Parker forgot he was getting old, and it was just like in his scenes, he basically couldn't act anymore and was really hard to watch. And the third thing is I'm giving Guiding Light props for this, fixing the camera shots on the digital camera shoots in PPAC and in these small interior sets where before they were so up close in your face and up the nose that these actors looked horrible – that they finally pulled back and have gotten a better part of, they've fixed the production module somewhere where they're not so in your face making everybody look horrendous, as Gina Tognoni talks about in this interview. So those are my best decisions.
Okay. My best decision, I think, was them finally realizing on All My Children to bring on a stupid garage band was actually a stupid idea. And to get rid of all those teeny boppers, because it absolutely made no sense. And also getting rid of Yaya DaCosta, who played the daughter of Angie, because I just don't know why she was there. So that was a best decision also was AMC snatching up Tamara Braun to play opposite Eden Regal.
All right.
And exploring that storyline some more. So I'm happy about that.
Brandon?
Well, I'm a little dubious about how it's going to work out because, you know, he doesn't have the best history when paired with a strong writer, but I think the best decision was Paul Roush's decision to come back to daytime on Young and the Restless. He's one of those
guys. I have that. Yeah, I think that's brilliant, and I have that kind of in a different category, but in the breaking news, best breaking news in the soap world, I really thought that was great that Paul Roush came back.
He's one of those old school guys that this genre really needs right now. He knows how to put on a show. He knows how to put on an exciting, gorgeous show. And like I said, I'm not sure how it's going to work out with Maria because she's obviously a strong writer and he's obviously a strong producer. And he hasn't always meshed well with strong people holding the pen. So I'm not sure how it's going to work out, but it's exciting to watch it unfold.
I have to tell you that is so true, and I'd like to just dovetail into the best breaking news story in the soap world. You know, with Lynn Latham leaving and clearing her desk out, and Josh Griffith being fired, because I really thought they took Young and the Restless in a horrible direction, and to hear Paul Roush coming back and Hogan Sheffer getting in a situation, not at Days, not floating around, and with Maria Rena Bell and this dream team being put together, the show is really exciting to watch. It's really good right now. And Paul Roush does such classic soap opera, and you think, to me, it's a great person to be at your helm because of the Bill Bell tradition. And I think Paul Roush, I think you're right about will he continually gel with his writing staff. But the show's never been better in a couple years than it is right now. So I thought that was great.
And it hasn't looked this good in 20 years.
It's gorgeous, but that's Paul Roush, too. I mean, they always have this detail. When you go onto the set of Young and the Restless, and I
been there many, many times, and the attention to detail that you really see up close on the set, I've not seen anywhere. It's in a class all its own. And then you have Paul Rausch, who does this gorgeous-looking classic soap opera.
And in his costumes, in the makeup, in the hair, I mean, he pays attention to everything. He really takes the title of producer in his title to heart. I mean, he really knows how to produce a show.
Grant Alexander, as we've talked about, is coming back with Philip on February 6th on Guiding Light. We were having lunch when I was in New York. We were having lunch with the Spaldings, which was kind of cool. And he was saying he talked to Paul Rausch just before he went back to Y&R, and he basically said, you know, Paul was just basically sitting on his hands. I mean, you could still see that the fire was in him and he wanted to do something, but he was kind of sitting around. You know,
yeah.
Paul was sitting around. So let's hope it stays good. Let's hope, because it's a great show right now.
Okay.
But my other best breaking news story in the soap world was Carolyn Hinsey being fired and that whole Hinseygate thing. I've never seen, in all my years doing this, it was great in one aspect and it was horrible in another. When Gossip.com had over 1,700 posts of people just slamming her and disgruntled employees, was mortifying. And then it dovetailed into, I can't believe what went in there. Gay things had nothing to do with Carolyn, things about other things, people slamming each other. It was just a commentary on what we are on the internet and how denigrating it became. It was it was fascinating to watch and upsetting at the same time, and she lost her job. So that's what I had as the best breaking news story.
Okay. I honestly don't have one. So, I mean, I don't. I totally skipped right over that one because I really couldn't think of something that I wanted to talk about.
Well, the worst breaking news story, I think, of the year in the soap world was Deidre and Drake being fired from Days.
You bet.
I mean,
okay. Well, we could go with that one. I agree.
I mean, you know, this is, you know, first of all, I want to just say that this is the second year in a row that Drake has been fired. You know, he came back, they fired him, they killed him off, they brought him back. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt really bad for Drake. You know, this stirred up so much mainstream press. You know, we never get press. And when Deidre and Drake got fired, we got all this press.
Everybody knew about it, yeah.
Everybody knew about it, and oh, my God, daytime's falling apart, and, you know, everything just broke, you know. And it really was bad for us, really bad, because on the heels of Deidre and Drake came the Ad Age article that soaps are falling apart and Susan Lucci's budget cuts, and, you know, it just kept spiraling from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really bad news. Really bad news. I feel really bad. But, you know, Ken Corday had to stay on the air.
Yeah. In the chat room, they're saying the worst soap news was that Super Soap Weekend got canceled.
Well, as we know, Joanne, from both being there and being out in the crowd, and I interviewed many people, and they were all really pissed.
Absolutely.
And it is a really sad commentary again, and it begs the question, is it our economy? Is it going to be, you know, are they not caring, people say, about their soaps? You know, as you know, because I know you work closely with ABC, Joanne, that Soap Nation is coming out, the Soap Nation tour, and the philanthropic
Hopefully it'll do justice.
You know, we're in a different time. You know, we're in a different time. And we're all going to have to kind of float with the changes. And I don't think daytime's going to go away. I think they have to reinvent themselves and keep fresh and be able to work within tight budget constraints to put on a show.
Yeah.
And it's really tough day in and day out to put on a quality show when you're working at that fast pace with reduced budgets.
Right. I agree. So we'll see what happens. Michael, let's go to the worst performance by an actor or actress.
Okay. Let me pull that up. All right. Because I've got... okay, so the women. I really had a problem with Talia Ash as Amira on As the World Turns. I can't even talk. And As the World Turns, it was such a stereotypical portrayal of an Iraq, you know, a woman from a foreign country with a thing on her head. I did not like it. I really thought Levin Rambin as Ava on All My Children did not work for me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I have problems at times with Allison Sweeney on Days as Sammy because it seems to be the same thing repetitively. My actors, I'm calling this Erica Kane's men. Mario Van Peebles and Walt Willey on All My Children.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. cardboard. And again, but my winner is Frank Parker on Days of Our Lives with Pop Brady, going down the plane, saying, oh, my son, and giving him the oxygen. It's just like, it was so bad. And the other one that really bothered me was Vincent on Passions.
Mm-hmm.
Philippe Jean-Marie. So there you go.
I think that my worst performances landed solely on All My Children with just one scene, and it brings me back to the teen people, Brianne Moncrief, Yaya DaCosta, and whatever the other kid's name is, Sterling something or other.
Yaya and Sterling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that like Destiny's Child? Brianna, Yaya.
You know, yeah, you know, it was just, it was Colby's, it was supposed to be Colby's 18th birthday. It was the night Richie Novak got killed when they were all up at Adam's cabin and she got drunk. She played the worst drunk I ever saw. And it was just so stupid. They didn't know if they hit him. And then that's when, Yaya's worst came out, if it wasn't out already. And, oh, my God, he killed somebody. I got to go to Paris now. Holy cow. So that whole thing just was so stupid. I thought the performances along with the storyline was just retarded.
So your worst performance by an actor was who?
Brianne.
No, that's
Yaya.
The actor. Yeah.
And I don't know what the kid's name is, Sterling something or other. He played Dre. I don't know what his name is. Yeah. The one that played Mario Van Peebles' kid. I can't think of what his last name is. Sterling Silver something. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. That's the only one that just really kind of popped out in my head. What about you, Brandon?
Well, my two are from One Life to Live, and as much as I love that show this year, my worst male was A. Martinez. And as fabulous as I love seeing him on screen again, that awful, god-awful accent that they saddled him with as Ray Montez was just atrocious. And there was no way he could make it, as good as he is, there was no way he could make it work. And he tried so hard, but it just didn't work. And I hear he's coming back, and Taya is representing him, and I'm just ready.
He is back. He is back, yeah.
And
that's
my worst female was Justice Boulding in the aftermath of the whole waterfall thing, when she just kind of reappeared
okay.
on the plane.
Can I? Yeah. And you know what's great about the waterfall thing, you guys? Do you know what really killed me? That was Mendora, prelude to it. Do you remember when she, all of a sudden, they were getting on the plane, and there she was, all
yes.
fine?
Yeah.
Yes, and her hair hadn't been messed up.
Her hair hadn't been
flawless.
Messed up. Did she just go over the falls?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
awful.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
It was horrible.
Yeah, it was. Let me see what this caller has to say. Area code 414. Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Hi, what's your name?
Hi.
Dolores.
Hi, Dolores.
Hi. How are
you? So, Dolores, who do you think was gave the worst performance by an actor or actress?
Well, unfortunately, I was waiting to talk to you about something else, and then
okay.
So I was talking about the best decision by an executive producer of a soap.
Yes,
sure.
What
is it?
And, well, I thought Ron Carlovati, who's the head writer, and the producers made a very good decision, and I'm sure it was a courageous one with Todd and Marty, and because I thought that was so questionable, but it seemed to arouse more questions and excitement for people. And I thought by that decision, that soap really rose above everything else. And,
that's a really good point, isn't it? Yeah.
It got people talking.
It
well,
really did, Laura.
And it's courageous to do it because, that's a touchy subject. And I thought it was great. The actors and actresses are always great in that, especially Todd and Marty. So I just wanted to put that point in and tell you that was my waiting on the phone for half an hour or two.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. Did you want to chime in on any of the other ones that we touched on?
Well, I'm surprised that Jeannie Cooper wasn't brought up about her performance, single-story performance, because she was really good and is still good as stories happening today. And I'm surprised that Peter Bergman wasn't brought up, and because a lot of the story has revolved around him in his lies and how that's all going to catch up with him, we don't know yet. And
well, I have more about Jeannie Cooper coming up. We haven't even gotten
yeah.
there.
Okay.
All right, Dolores. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, you know, we're coming up on 10:35, guys.
Well, I think we need to do the most irritating soap character.
Oh, go ahead. I could give you a couple. Go ahead.
I've got a list here, guys. I'm going to give you my runner-ups and then give you the most irritating. So, on Y&R, Anna, the little girl, who sings the gospel, and she calls Nia Peebles Ms. Karen. I can't stand it. She goes, Ms. Karen, is that okay? Really bad. Epiphany in General Hospital, I'm sorry. I don't know how a nurse bosses around the doctors in a hospital. I don't. Sharon on Young and the Restless, where Sharon Casey's to be this great heroine, and Sharon, she's just annoying. Jerry Jacks on General Hospital, how many times can we change whatever course this character is? I don't understand the character, and I don't like the character. I have a problem with Claudia on General Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
A real problem with Claudia. When she comes on, I'm irritated. I'm irritated by Sarah Brown. The Sarah Brown. This Claudia character is just not working for me. I'm very irritated this year by Lulu of General Hospital. This was someone I really rooted for, Lulu. And after the whole thing with wigging out in the hospital and her mother and the axe, you know, the thing with, what's his name? Who she killed? Logan.
Logan.
Yeah. I didn't care about her anymore. Melanie on Days of Our Lives, guys. That character is really hard to watch. And I'm sorry to tell you, Tessa in One Life to Live is irritating to me to watch because she's so histrionic. But my number one most irritating character of the year is Eden on The Young and the Restless. They brought in Aaron Sanders to play, you know, Eden, who was Michael Baldwin's half-sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then they dumped her because she was so bad. And they brought in another girl, Vanessa Morano, who's even worse. I mean, and this character is this annoying teenager who is like, it's like chalkboard for me. So Eden on Young and the Restless is the most.
Oh,
annoying.
God. Okay. Well, mine is Colby Chandler.
We're back to Brianna. Brianna's got four awards tonight.
Brianne Moncrief.
She's the big winner here tonight.
She is. She's winning. Just winning. I think she's terrible on All My Children. Okay.
But you're saying this is the character, not the actress. The character.
Yeah,
you're
that's what I'm talking
character.
About. I'm
okay.
talking about the
Colby.
Character, not the
Colby.
Yeah, Colby. Colby Chandler.
There you go.
Colby Chandler. I think she's annoying as all hell. I do. And you know what? She's not on the show anymore, but...
What other awards
do
we give Brianna Moncrief?
Okay. Listen, he's not on the show anymore. Michael Corinthos is really, really annoying to me. So even though he's not there anymore, he annoyed the hell out of me. I just... Oh, my gosh. I can't even stand it. You know
We're
what? Not for nothing, this little kid Shane on One Life to Live, he might have played opposite George Clooney, but you know what? He's annoying. He is. I don't know what it is. I got kids, everybody. I mean, seriously. I love
the
kids.
The thing that I have
kids
a problem with him.
The shit out of me.
Well, the problem with that is he's always like, my dad.
Yeah,
no, my
dad.
My real dad.
Yeah, and then he got the gifts today from Rex, and he was like, "It's okay, I still like everything else that you got me, Dad." And he was like, "Oh, okay,
son. I was like, oh, my God, I want to shoot myself in the eye. Okay, so enough of the kids, I think. I just lost my place. Brandon, go ahead. Let me find my place.
I'm irritated by Shane's mother, Gigi, on One Life to Live. You know what? I want to like Farrah Fath so bad, but every time she comes on screen, I just feel like scratching into the inside of my skull, and that character's not working for me. It's just not. I don't know if it's Farrah or if it's the writing. I'm not sure what it is, but Tess was a close second, but Gigi on One Life to Live was
everybody's second. Yeah, I have.
You know what? People in the chat room are agreeing with you. They're saying Gigi is not that great. I don't like the new girl Vanessa. And Lola.
Can I just dovetail in there that in the category of worst new characters, I have Vanessa and Lola. Absolutely.
Okay. There you go. I got them too.
I think they are just horrible. I mean, who wants them? I don't. What is that?
No, I don't know. It's just somebody else for Christian to bang. You know, they needed to get him a woman with some breasts.
Okay, but wait a minute. Do you think Christian is this stupid? Is he going to be again this stupid, or is he in on the whole thing?
I don't know. I wish they would give my David Fumero something serious, because I love David more than life itself, and I think he is fabulous.
Maybe they can put David Fumero with Brianna Moncrief.
You know? No, God. He'd be with another 12-year-old boy.
I had also on Worst New Characters Marcus on Bold and Beautiful. I mean, they brought him in as Donna's illegitimate son.
Mm-hmm.
And the story went nowhere.
Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. And I also, I don't like Petey Cortland.
Really? See, I do. That was my favorite comeback, favorite new character.
Really?
I think he's hysterical. I love him. I really do. I think Danny Kennedy, I mean, I had a couple interviews with him, and I think that he's got such potential. If they give him the correct material.
But I don't think it's written right. I think it's written, like, predictable. I don't like the character. I mean, I think I get him as the actor. What I don't like is the character. It's like, okay, we get it. He's the geek, but he's not, and he's snarky, and he's sexy. You know, I get it. It's, like, so predictable to me.
I think they need to put him with David Hayward and make them some sort of team. I think they should have paired him up with David to do some dirty work other than Chris Schell. That's what
Brandon,
I think.
Who's your worst new character?
I'm going back to what you said earlier with Eden on Young and the Restless. I think that it's a bomb of a character, and
Eden?
And it's no matter who's playing it, it's a bomb.
No, it's those two girls. I mean, it's bad. I couldn't believe that they went from that one to that one.
The only good thing about it is the look on Christian LeBlanc's face when he has to act opposite her, because you can tell he is completely horrified by having to act opposite these complete amateurs.
Coming in, Georgette is sending in a message that I guess it would be under recast would be Justice Boulding, her worst recast. So, okay, as Sarah. Yeah, she's terrible. Okay, whatever, she's not there no more, so.
And now I'd like to do the worst character of the year. There is one character that, it was hard, but the character that I think is just the worst character is Grady on Guiding Light. Played by Kamen Era. I mean, this guy killed Tammy. And then they tried to, then he kidnapped Lizzie, but then they're trying to, like, redeem him. I mean, and then he's like a bad killer. Like, he can't pull it off. I just think it's a terrible, terrible character. And then again, I have to go with my favorite Amira from As the World Turns, the Iranian girl, who showed up out of nowhere to break up Luke and Noah.
Okay.
any worst characters?
Jesus. You know, let me ponder for a second, because I'm going to take a call.
Right.
Area code 775. Hello?
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you? What's your name?
My name's Rachel. How are you guys?
Great,
how are
Rachel.
You?
So what do you think about the category?
I actually have an irritating character, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I really think that Olivia is, like, the worst character, like, the worst irritating character on General Hospital. Like, I try to like her because I was really excited when they had Kate, like, have family come on the show. But I think she's really hypocritical all the time about her cousin, and I just hate that.
Are you a big Megan Ward fan?
I am a Megan Ward fan, yeah.
Yes, she's great, huh?
She's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, she is.
She's pretty much the reason I watch, so her and Maurice, so.
Oh, okay.
And can I also do the like the worst character one?
Yeah.
Sure.
I think I have to agree with you on this one, Michael. I think Claudia is really annoying. I think she's the worst character.
Don't you see that everything?
I think it's...
Yeah.
I like Sarah Brown, but I don't like how they're having her paired with Sunny right now after everything she did and the event of Michael shooting. And
I know.
They're kind of just giving her everything.
I know.
So I just hate that. But
yeah, I'm with you all the way.
And
yeah, Claudia doesn't work.
What was the one that we just said? Michael.
Worst character.
Worst character.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that one, Rachel? That's it, Claudia?
Oh, I think that's Claudia, yeah.
Okay.
Her worst character is Claudia.
Okay, cool. I think I have a little delay. Sorry, guys. Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much, Rachel.
Bye.
Thank you. Have a good Happy New Year, guys.
You too.
You too.
My worst character, I think I have a few. Okay, I'll start with the girl, Cassie, on All My Children. Even though she's gone, she was still the worst because there was just no purpose to her. I don't particularly like... And I might get booed for this, J.R. Martinez brought on All My Children. Don't yell at me.
I'm not yelling.
I'm telling everybody in the chat room not to yell at me, just in case they do. I don't know. I just don't think that, I mean, he's a soldier. I think he plays a soldier good. I don't know. I just don't think it's a good thing. I think that's kind of like over the top acting also, you know what I mean? Because he's really not an actor. So I think that's all I have to say about that one, you know.
Okay.
When we did worst couple, did we do best couple? Did I miss that one?
We did best
pass
couple
on that?
And I did Robin and Patrick.
Okay, I just wanted to, I'm looking at my notes. I have to say Vicky and Charlie.
Oh, they're good.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to put that one in there. I like Vicky and Charlie as best couple. Georgette, of course, is saying Jess and Nash.
All right, Nash.
Okay, Nash. Yeah. So, okay, what's the next category on your screen, Michael?
Best special episode. And I thought there were some really, really tremendous and terrific episodes this year on the soap operas to celebrate things and or whatever. And I really have to say that I have two. I was really, really moved to tears during the Eileen Hurley tribute. I thought it was the best tribute I have seen a show give an actress, really, in memory. I thought it was so well done. I loved the carnival funeral idea, you know, memorial. I thought Zach falling apart in the elevator was so great. The poem, just the whole thing. I hated Eden Regal singing, but I loved the episode. And the other one was the 40th anniversary episode of One Life to Live. I thought they were just great, especially the one where Vicky went to heaven. And she was with Ben, who I love, Mark Derwin. I just thought those two episodes I thought were terrific.
I like them. I agree with you there also. Also, I liked the 1960 story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that goes without, as I'm saying.
Yeah, like that
I
also.
I loved it.
So I have to agree. Brandon, do you have an opinion on that one?
Yes, I do. But before I tell you, I want to tell Michael, my favorite scene from the One Life to Live episode that I haven't heard anybody talk about was when Stephen Markle and Robin Strasser said goodbye to each other again.
Oh,
and Stephen Markle kind of walked away.
Okay.
When they
the look on Robin's face was just priceless. I mean,
was that
was,
not the best? I loved
heartbreaking, and she was terrific.
She was wonderful, and I miss Mel. I love
her. Yeah, I like how they bring Mel back as the female. I think that's pretty cool.
That was clever, too. Very clever.
Yeah.
But I had two special episodes that I loved, and the first one was, it's going to sound strange, but I thought it was exceedingly clever, was Who Wants to Be Shane Marasco's Father on
One
Last Move. Oh,
that's cute. Yep.
With Ty Treadway coming back, and they're on the set of Millionaire, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
Ty Treadway is no Marlon Brando. Let's not be, let's not miss words about that, but it was very clever the way they did it, and Ty Treadway was phenomenal working with John Paul. I thought they worked off each other very well, and I just loved how clever it was. It was such a clever idea for, you know, something you've seen episodes a million times, a gunshot and a coma. It was a very
mm-hmm.
clever, a clever new twist on that idea.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
And my other favorite special episode was the episode of Night Shift where Sharon Wyatt and John Reilly came back. I thought it was brilliantly constructed as a fantasy of Robert's, kind of his friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, gathering together and
that was
telling
beautiful.
Him to pull himself back up.
Oh, it was beautiful.
And I thought it was brilliantly constructed.
It was brilliant. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I thought that was great. All of that stuff with Robert was tremendous.
I agree. Let me take a call real quick, Michael. I have area code 914, which is my hometown, Yonkers, New York, Westchester County.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm here. Fine, thanks. How's it going?
Good. What's your opinion there? Turn down your speakers a little, Teresa.
Sorry. I was trying to get a call in that a previous topic, the best category for best couple on the TV. On TV. Definitely Sunny and Kate, without a doubt, hands down. Best love story, best true story, most realistic that I've seen in a long, long time. So,
may I ask you a question? How do you feel about, a lot of us love Sunny and Kate together. Was it hard for you to see her get shot twice in 1 year? You know?
I think it was, I have to be honest with you, it was completely ridiculous. You know, a lot of females watch the show.
Yep.
We watch for, you know, romance, we will watch for passion and all that other
right.
stuff. And, you know, there's so much violence that we watch on the daily news. We
mm-hmm.
really don't need to see it on, you know, on General Hospital, especially when you
right.
have Kate shot twice in 1 year. I mean, it's just,
right.
it's stupid. I'm sorry.
I mean,
it's just like, you know, this poor woman has been poisoned. She's been hit, you know, in a car accident. She's been, you know, any other, like, tragedy they could possibly think of, it's always happening to Megan Ward, and I think that's really offensive. I just think that...
Did you get to read my interview with Megan on my birthday?
Yes, I did. I have to compliment you. It was a really great interview. But then again, Megan always gives, like, the best interviews anyway.
She's great. I mean, she's great. And we sat down, you know, we were sitting at Fred Siegel's together in West Hollywood, and we sat down and did this in person, and you God love her. You know, she's a great interview, and everything she says, right, is, like, so true.
Absolutely. You know, I have to be honest with you. I'm, you know, before her, I've watched soaps on and off for like 15, 16 years because of Maurice. And she started coming on in 2007. I was like, she really, from the moment she walked into that coffee shop, she blew my mind. It was just like she really went toe-to-toe with Maurice. And for a soap actor newbie, she
yeah.
really held her own, you know. And to see her performance day in and out within the past 18 months, she really has hit the mark each and every single time. So I just find it really offensive to, you know, to have such a strong performer come on air and give her lines and her strength, and that, you know, you do everything, like throw her literally under the bus every single day. So it's just
mm-hmm.
like, and you know, and as far as the new characters that have come on, I've tried, I'll be honest with you. And not because I'm a Megan fan or anything like that. I tried to appreciate Sarah J. Brown when she came back, and I tried to appreciate Lisa, you know, coming in as Olivia. But, you know, when you're shoved the character in your throat daily, and it's just like they're forcing you to love the character or follow this character, and then when you take away from the rich history of General Hospital to change the stories to fit new characters, I find that offensive. I really think
that... boy, you say so many things that echo in so many fans out there. It would be so... Have you written Bob Guza? Have you written General Hospital? Have you tried to... I mean, because this is what everybody... Joanne and I were talking about this tonight, of our disdain for how the mobster thing goes on in General Hospital, and, you know, we
yes.
get away from
the
story.
I wouldn't mind the mobster stuff if it was balanced.
You're right,
yeah.
not balanced. That's what I'm saying. Yes, it's not
yeah,
balanced.
It's totally, like, every single... And like you mentioned before with the shooting of Michael, you know, nothing for nothing. If you are so... if you have so many female viewers watching this,
right.
I don't think there are females that are watching this are excited. Oh, let's get a kid shot in the head.
No,
you know,
I'm saying they don't want to see their kid shot. It's
yeah,
hard for
you know,
a woman to watch.
And, well, honestly, I'm a General Hospital fan, but I have to say another thing too: the violence against women is just phenomenal this year. It's just like if you're not getting choked or stabbed or, you know, it's just it's ongoing and it's really offensive. It really is. I mean, because I remember watching like Friday's episode when Robin got married, and you watch the mention of Stone and Robin and that kind of
mm-hmm.
history. That's what people want to see. You want to see your angst, but you want to see true angst. You don't want to see this, you know, plot-driven stories. You want to see more of the character and the richness and the history of it all. So,
yeah,
and that's why
I agree.
That's why the Night Shift
Absolutely.
Episode was so great, because it played on the history so magnificently with Robert and Anna and Tiffany and Sean.
It was
you know,
yeah,
I mean, what's more moving than watching, you know, one of your family members, one of your best friends, fight a terrible
exactly.
disease? And I mean,
well,
you
also,
know, that's the kind of drama.
Also, Friday.
No, and that's exactly it. And, you know, and I have to be honest, like I said, for best couple, why I say Sunny and Kate is because I like the dynamic of it. It's a true original story in the sense that, you know, you have couples that are talking about their problems. There's not like, okay, I'm pissed. Let me throw the barware. Let me yell at you, scream at you. I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
a real serious communication going on. So it's, and it's beautiful to watch that. It's honest. It's pure. It's innocent. It's not, anger-driven sex to bring the couple together. I mean, it's just
right.
emotionally it goes. I mean, it's a working story. So,
right.
you know, and to watch now that, like, for General Hospital to twist it and have a marriage of convenience, just, you know, it's just, I'm sorry, it's ridiculous. I'm just,
no, I agree.
Ridiculous.
I agree.
Teresa,
I have to ask you, where are you from?
I'm from Peekskill.
Okay, very good. See, not
yeah,
that
about
far.
Like, 20 minutes out of, yeah, no. I'm like 30
she's a,
minutes,
she's
minutes,
a Yonkers girl. She's a Westchester girl. So I had a show
well,
to live. There you go.
Thank
all right.
you. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you, thank you so much.
Bye.
All right, honey. Go Yonkers. Hey. Okay. Michael, we only got 3 minutes left. We're going to have to go into overtime because I can't even extend the show. I mean, if you want to hang out for some more calls, or some more topics, we can definitely do that. I just won't be able to take any more phone calls.
What do you want to do? We have to.
We
get
can do it. Let's pick something. Pick a good one.
Well, let's go to the top then, right? I mean, let's mm-hmm. do best actor of the year. I'll tell you who was in my top. I had Eric Braeden, Jason Thompson, Tristan Rogers for Night Shift, Tyler Christopher for the first half of the year till May when he was still dealing with the brain tumor. And saying goodbye to Emily. I had Michael Easton, I say that. And but my choice for Actor of the Year, hands down, is Trevor St. John of One Life to Live, because he made this Todd Marty storyline work in a very difficult, controversial situation, and I don't think anybody else could have pulled it off. And he's been absolutely riveting to watch. So it's Trevor. Trevor. There you go.
Completely agree with you. I think Trevor St. John has hands down locked it for me this year, and I hope he definitely wins an Emmy. That's my best for male.
Brandon,
and,
who's your male?
I had Trevor as a close second, but my favorite was actually, believe it or not, I know he didn't have a lot of story in 2008, but he made work swimmingly what he had, and that was Bob Woods.
I loved him.
Yeah,
especially during the resolution of the 68 storyline where he
yep.
came to peace with Asa.
Yep.
You know, he's one of those guys you never catch him in a false moment. He's always true and he's always dead on. And
I had Bob Woods as because I think Bob Woods should be up for lead actor, but I have him as you know. Biggest waste of talent. They never give
That's
him an
That's what actor. I had to.
I have Bob Woods as biggest waste of talent. Here he is, the great actor, and
mm-hmm.
we saw those little gems that you're talking about, and all it made me want is, you know, where's the storyline? Give him a storyline.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. Bob Woods is most underused, underrated, under-wasted of talent right there. I agree.
And I had Nia Peebles, Nancy Legrand, and Ellen Dolan as my other waste of talent. I mean,
yes.
Nia Peebles has no story. What is she doing on there? Ellen Dolan, who's terrific, As the World Turns, wasted. And Nancy Legrand is nowhere to be found. So,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely. I completely agree. Michael, we can definitely go into overtime. We only got 1 minute remaining. You want to go into overtime?
Well, we got to give the best actress and the best soap, right?
Okay, so we're going into overtime. Go ahead.
All right, so best actress of the year.
Michael, if you want to continue with some of the other ones, that's fine, because we have the time now, so we're just going into overtime. So if you want to continue with some of the smaller ones, we can do that too.
So who hears us?
They all can still hear us.
Oh, but they can't call in.
Right.
Okay. Are they still in the chat room then, or you can't get in there?
No, the chat room's in.
Okay.
We can do probably about maybe five more.
Okay. So where were we? I'm trying to, let's see. Well, let's do
Biggest
best
waste
actor.
Of talent?
Biggest waste of talent, yeah. So I had Robert Woods. I had Nia Peebles because this, you know, I've talked to Nia many times. Where is her story? They have her as a goody two-shoes. They have her no part. They had her singing. She has no story and no character. They've got not developed this character. Ellen Dolan in As the World Turns, as I said, Margot, what a great character. She's had such great work. Still nothing really to do. And Nancy Legrand, as I said, I don't know what happened there. Where is she? Where's Alexis?
Yeah.
Where's the story?
Yeah.
But Robert Woods is my top biggest waste of talent.
Mine too.
Mine are on all my children. I've got two. I've got Rebecca Budig, who was brought back with huge fanfare and giving nothing storyline-wise.
Right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
the entire year was just a total wash. And the other one is Beth Ellers. They brought her back, or they brought her over to All My Children.
Yeah. I thought Beth Ellers, too. Mm-hmm.
The storyline is going absolutely nowhere. And, you know, she's arguably the best actress under 40 in daytime, period.
Right.
And the story is just going nowhere. And it's a shame because she's so, so talented. She can make anything work.
Anything. Yeah. I had the special effects categories. I had the worst use of special effects, the tornado cutout characters. When you see the tornado and All My Children and you would watch the actors situated, simulated inside the CGI and that green screen inside, they looked like they were literally cut out. It looked so disparate. It was like I was watching cardboard cutouts stuck in a screen. And I thought it was horrible. I mean, as much as beautiful as it looked without the characters in it, when you put the characters in it, it looked so phony.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I want to say overall, I gave the best use of special effects. I have to tell you, none. Because I don't think daytime does special effects well, even with the CGI. And I don't think they should even waste their I just don't think that's what we're about. I think we're about emotional story between characters. And every time we go out and try to do something that's a big, grandiose thing, it never will live up to a motion picture or a primetime television look. It is.
Although, to be fair, the helicopter ride on All My Children
on All My Children was pretty fantastic. I mean, that
pretty
was
damn exciting.
One, yeah, that was the one of all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Blog Talk shut us off.
What'd you say?
They shut us off. They suck.
What? I don't get it.
Meaning that they're not letting anybody else call in to listen. They have a button that you can press on where it says click to listen,
right,
or click to talk, and it cut it off. It's not letting anybody do it. None of them can hear it.
Oh, so nobody can hear it.
Well, they'll hear it once they download it, you know. So let's just round it up with the top one, and we'll call it a night. And then we'll pick it up in January with what's going to happen in 2009.
All right, so let's do Best Actress. So here's what I had. Here's my list, and I'll give you my winner. So I had Erica Slezak, Elizabeth Hubbard, Melody Thomas-Scott, because she finally had some scenes that she actually pulled off, Jeannie Cooper, who was phenomenal, Kimberly McCullough, who I thought was really great because she had two shows she was doing. And I put honorable mention to Tallulah, David Vickers the dog. but my actress of the year is Susan Haskell of One Life to Live. Because I tell you, it didn't really matter to me that when the scenes played out in November and leading up to that and everything subsequently, there has not been one day that she has been on that has not been just, oh, my God, I've got to see this and watch what she does. Because none of these other actors, they're all phenomenal. Phenomenal. But Susan Haskell in this last part of the year is got it. So I'm going with Susan as my actress of the year.
Okay. My actress of the year was Alicia Minshew.
Ah.
I just think that Alicia is extremely talented. I think that she handles everything that they give her just fantastically. So that's who I chose. I think that she does a fabulous job, and I think that, you know, she's someone that works every single day. She was also my pick for best actress, who has to juggle so much material thrown at her and make it work. She's definitely in there. I don't know, this year I just kind of fell in love with Alicia Minshew.
All right, Brandon.
Brandon.
Well, I agree with you, Michael, about Susan Haskell, but my favorite, again, and it's not just because I love her, it's because I really, really was riveted by her all year long, and it's Laura Wright.
Okay.
I thought she started off the year in January.
Well,
when
I'm not
found
surprised.
She found out the truth about Jake. I thought she was absolutely dynamite, and then during the whole Michael
shooting
thing.
I'm
going to
go Susan Haskell, too.
She was great. She was great.
Mm-hmm.
The one
yeah.
year,
definitely,
you know,
yeah.
it was the year that I thought.
And her and Trevor St. John, both with that controversial storyline, it was just incredible.
Who's this? What?
I don't know what just happened. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish what you were saying. I don't know what. Okay. All righty. So, go ahead. Finish what you were saying. My son is in here. I'm sorry. I have my little guy with me. He's having a hard time sleeping.
Wait, who just talked? Brandon?
I have my son here with me, Michael. He's having a hard time sleeping.
Oh.
Okay. Go ahead. Finish saying what you were saying.
What I was saying about Laura Wright?
Yeah.
Oh, I was saying that it was the year that I thought Laura Wright really defined herself in the role of Carly.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It was finally the year that you finally said, okay, it is her role, and you can't see anybody else really playing it now.
And even with Sarah Brown coming back and those two sharing scenes together, it was still.
Yeah, I thought that about her a while ago. I mean, a lot of people, honestly, I don't remember Sarah Brown now as Carly. I can only see Laura Wright as Carly.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and I feel that's such a testament to how good Laura has become in this role. And you see the weight, and as I said to Brandon, it's the amount of material that she has given day after day after day, and that she rises to the occasion. I mean, she goes through a ton of material. I mean, this is she's working every, you know, she's on all the time.
Right.
And no matter what they throw at her, she makes it work. Sometimes they paint her as the most horrible shrew in the history of the world, and yet she makes it work, and she makes you root for her.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right.
So.
I agree. Well, I completely agree with you guys on Laura Wright. I think she's fabulous. And I completely enjoyed this show.
Well, don't you want to do best soap?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Well, it's One Life to Live.
Well, you know what? We all agree on that.
No question.
So,
as it was throughout part of the first part of the year, they really came back gangbusters in the second
half. Correct. And I'm going from after the strike. You know, they really came back. And there hasn't been, you know, Y&R is a close second, and Night Shift were my other choices. But One Life to Live is it's their year, and I really sincerely hope we will see them win a daytime Emmy.
Right, I hope so too. That'll be fabulous if they do. They really deserve it.
They've got the reels if they pick the right episodes. There's no way they
do. So I think the three of us are going to have to go to Frank Valentini's office and tell him what to pick, just to make sure.
Yeah, you know, we're going to have to send in some letters to him and make sure he knows. Because, seriously, they definitely need to win. And, honestly, I swear to God, I hope General Hospital loses so big this year just so they'll just snap out of it. You know, I had John Engel was on the show, and he was hoping that they did not win an Emmy for Best Show. Did he not say that, Brandon? He was really disappointed that they won because he really hoped that they lost and it would make it turn around. He was very candid in that interview, very, very candid on the entire storylines, everything. So I hope they lose, just so it'll get better.
Well, I'll tell you what, if One Life picks anything from January and anything from November, I don't see how they can
Yeah, I don't think they can lose because between the the whole thing in Paris, Texas, and the baby,
mm-hmm.
and then Marty and Todd. I mean, those were the most riveting storylines I've seen in soaps in a long time.
Right.
And I would love to see everybody get nominations. I would love Kathy Breyer to, you know, I wanted Kathy Breyer the year before that she never got nominated. Mm-hmm.
Right.
All right, guys.
I agree. All right, well, I want to say thank you to Michael Fairman and Brandon and to all the Stardish listeners who participated in tonight's Best and Worst Show of Soaps for 2008. My next show will be on the 5th of January, so that'll be at 10 p.m. Eastern time, so make sure you check that out. And Michael's going to be a regular guest on Stardish. We're just going to map it out, right, Michael?
Right, and you can go to michaelfairmansoaps.com for all the interviews with the stars and behind the scenes and the news and everything, so I would encourage everyone to go there. And I also wanted to tell everybody that starting January 5th, hello?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
January 5th, oh, I thought we were dead. January 5th, I'm launching a new on XM24, the Pink Channel. It's a new interstitial show called Soap Break, and it'll be on every day on your daily rotation on XM24, which plays music of the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, the new millennium. And the
okay.
Pink Channel is for women with the City of Hope's channel. So it's a heavily trafficked women's channel. And
oh, wonderful.
So you'll get your news and your little tidbits and little sound bites from the interviews with the stars.
Oh, cool. Very cool. All right. Very good. Congratulations, Michael.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to everybody, and we will talk to you on January 5th. Signing off from Stardish. Thanks, Brandon. Bye, Michael.
Bye.
Happy New Year.